I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. Enjoy the show, everybody.
Hello, Washington, D.C. We're Passion Pit from Boston, Massachusetts.
Another one comes down. tall as the grass in the night. Or the tunes on your show. Or the buildings in the city. Or your children on the
for coming out tonight. This is our second time here. And we've been touring on our new album out, which is called Manners, and you can get in the back corner. And we've been playing a lot of shows. They've been good. This one's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm
you very much. It's only 11:05 right now, but I'd like to take this moment on behalf of the band to dedicate this song to Brent, the drummer of Harlem Shakes, whose birthday is at midnight.
Yeah! So,
I just, happy birthday, dude.
Come lay you with me on the ground.
A short but very sweet set from Passion Pit. I haven't seen the Black Cat be hopping like this in a long time. This sold-out show just from in front of the soundboard, about 10 feet forward from that onward, everybody was just leaping up, clapping with their hands up in the air. The last song, Smile Upon Me, was from their Chunk of Change EP. They're certainly going to come back. And here they are. Let's see what they do.
Thanks very much, everybody. so much.
Passion Pit, playing lots of songs from their latest CD, Manners, and of course, Chunk of Change, their EP. A high energy set, but incredibly short. I guess, what do you do with a band with one album and an EP? I guess they played, it's like 40 minutes, maybe 45 minute set. That's like the old days. Bands would come out and play 30, 35 minute sets. These days you get 2 hour sets. Great set from Passion Pit. We'll archive this show, of course, on the NPR music site. So npr.org/allsongs is one way to find it. Click the button that says concerts. And then, of course, the live concert podcast. It'll probably be on the live concert podcast tomorrow. So look out for that. You can subscribe to that by going to iTunes is one place. But look for All Songs Considered and look for live concert podcast. And that was a great set. I'll put the interview from Passion Pit in case you missed it. I'll put that on the end of the show. Our engineer is Mark Greenhouse. Robin Hilton produced the show. Camden Andrews managed the chat room. Our new intern for the summer here. You'll be hearing a lot from Camden. Joel Diedrichsen, as I waved to him walking by here, took the pictures, which will be online. They're on a Flickr site now. We'll put them up online on the NPR music site. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
I'm here in the dressing room with Black Cat in Washington, D.C. with Passion Pit. Why don't we first just go around and everybody introduce themselves and their instrument. That would be a good start. Michael, you want to start?
My name is Michael Angelakis, and I sing and play keyboards.
My name is Nate Domoy, and I play drums.
Hey, I'm Jeff Apruzzi, and I play bass.
Hi, I'm Ed Ladamy, and I play synthesizers and samplers.
I'm Ian Holtquist. I play keyboards and guitar.
I saw you all play in Austin at South by Southwest. And
what show were you at?
That's what I was amazed. Not that it was a good show. I wasn't amazed that it was a good show. Okay, but I was amazed that, A, it was incredibly packed, and also that just about everyone seemed to know all of the words. Here's what I'm trying to figure out is if you understand what it is that you're doing, well, the easy way to put it, what are you doing that's right? Or better, what are you doing that seems to be connecting with people? Can you figure that out? Do you know what it is? Michael, you want to start?
I think one of our strengths is melody. And, I mean, this is pop music at its core. And you can dress up pop music in so many different ways, shapes, and forms. But I think right now what we've chosen to dress it up as is this kind of extremely energetic and manic and excited and jubilant, overwhelming kind of, you know, pretty pop music that I think originally resonated with my friends. And it has become something that's resonated with a lot of other people. I don't know, I think it's just there's this kind of like feeling of intense joy when we play. And we think that kind of that energy and that joy is easily like communicated. That's what I think we do well.
Anybody else, can you get a feeling for what it is that you're doing either, let's say as a bass player or as a keyboardist? Can you tell at all?
I think it's because when we, at least in the live show, it's because we play our hearts out, kind of, and I don't think we're jaded yet, and we're still young and surprised by everything. So when we tomorrow is going to be a different story. But what I meant was when he was talking about looking out and seeing people singing along and stuff, that's kind of overwhelming, and like it makes you kind of relive the first time you've heard or played the song, and so you play harder and you sweat it out. I don't know, and I guess people really appreciate that.
I was wondering about Well, why don't we talk for a minute, go backwards just a second about how the songs come to be, and then I want to sort of get to the fact of, like, what happens night to night after night? How do these songs change? Because they feel, like you say, I mean, they're pop songs, but they're very tightly orchestrated would be one way, but arranged maybe is a better word I'm looking for.
The recording process is, like, an its own entity separate from the live process. That's kind of how the band started. That's kind of, you know, I worked in the studio and Nate came in and worked in the studio with me and we, the guys came in and worked on some things, but mostly the recordings are in and of themselves like another project, and the live project is like, it takes those songs and reimagines them and translates them.
Okay, so the, know, for a live so time. In that recording part of the process, and is it
mostly just like a building block thing where we go in. I didn't have anything prepared for this record. I preferred it that way. I wanted to use the studio as an instrument, and I think Nate and I and everyone, like, we did that. And that was the point. And also that makes this, like, the whole thing, like, since we don't come together and make these songs like in a practice space, we have to then take the final recordings and then translate them in our own way with different instruments and different setups, and it's a very interesting process for us. That's what makes this band pretty special for us.
We webcast a week, 2 weeks ago, Dan Deacon, who basically, you know, a solo performer often, and then just basically he realized his, on the Brahms record, he realized it for, I think he had 13 musicians on stage. He had to sort of deconstruct what he did in the studio and figure out how to do that. Well, you guys managed to do it with five. Do you do stuff in the studio then that is hard to pull off live?
Definitely. You know, I feel that we all have our own setups live, and in the studio there's so many different synthesizers and programs and stuff that they can pull out, and it's like this immense, like, layered project. And then when you're up on stage, it's like I've got two keyboards and a little box, and we have like this much limited set of equipment, and it's kind of like translating stuff that could have been tweaked for days into like one patch that I can call in like 2 seconds. So that's the fun for me in it.
Describe the setup some, because there's you know,
like technic, like,
well, I mean, what kinds of keyboards you use, how many are there, what other
got, like,
instruments
eight
are
keyboards,
there
keyboards, I guess in essence two samplers, like count your laptop, kind of like a sampler, usually of the vintage variety. They just, I feel they sound better, or if not vintage, at least analog.
Names
digital
are okay.
Moog, I use Moog and Roland. Yamaha, old stuff is really good. Michael likes to use electric pianos.
We just started using Korg stuff on this tour.
Just like building all this stuff together to recreate it, I guess.
Our setup, especially, I know each of us individually, I feel like it's constantly evolving. Like even on this tour, Mike has exchanged roads for like getting smaller things. So at this point, we have quite a large setup with like, I think, 8 keyboards on stage and all that. But you know, if you come see us like 2 months from now, it could be a different setup where I have one keyboard on stage or something like that. It's all a matter of just, the most important thing is making sure that you are able to reach all the sounds that you need from the record to, you know, relation to the stage. It's not easy, but yeah.
It's fun.
It is fun.
It's my favorite part.
It's a fun challenge.
One of my favorite parts.
So then, and on this, on the current record, then you're, what I didn't understand, I just assumed they came more from one person and then was sort of handed through to the band and the band learned tunes, but that's not at all what you're saying. You're saying that this sort of grew in the studio together as a bunch of people making music. Is that right, Mike? No?
I misunderstood that. Yeah, no, it's, okay. I've written the songs, but the arrangements you listen to live are, it's everyone.
Okay.
I mean, like, you know, the recordings that we've done, like, they'll all serve as a reference, but not much more than that. We like to try to branch out from that as much as possible. And, I mean, the singles and everything, we try to keep it pretty close to the album,
yeah,
because that's just the familiarity aspect, but yeah, I think, yeah.
So then how do you all figure out the parts that you're going to do? It's a lot of keyboards, you know? I mean, how does...
No.
Yeah.
How do you mean that? That's an interesting statement.
It's kind of gotten to the point where, like, everyone understands, you know, like, what kind of area they're covering.
So what area are you covering then?
I'm covering bass, which
okay.
is probably the
yeah,
simplest
that's easy. That's
area
clear.
To,
okay.
To
and
text,
the drums,
you know?
We understand. And drums. Real drums.
And then it was kind of, like, divided that Ayad handles more of, like, the lead synthier lines.
Okay.
And samples, and Ian does like the guitar stuff and holding out chords.
Guitar stuff that's keyboard based, yes?
No, well, both.
Okay.
This record introduced more guitar and real instruments than before. Like, I have some piano parts that I play now, and I mean, if there was ever a piano on a Passion Pit song before, it was like a weird sampled thing that wasn't realistic, but now there's baby grands and stuff on that on the record, so.
Were you going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say it was like the Bismarcky piano, you know, it was like the sample piano. It wasn't anything really that serious. But.
I think they used Philip Glass's old piano on the record, which is like pretty awesome.
Studio we were in is his old studio, so he left his
Bose and Beaufort.
Gigantic Studios in Tribeca. And he left his grand piano there with three extra bass keys. It's kind of unreal sound. Just sounds like someone hitting a skyscraper skeleton with a massive hammer. Just like, dong.
Strings are so thick too; they're like deadly.
Yeah, they actually had to take off the lowest one because if it snaps, it will just cut your head off.
Yeah.
And what song would I hear that on? So now I'm gonna go back and listen to it.
Moss Wings.
Thanks. I don't know if this actual keys were used.
And like Let Your Love Grow Tall, and I think it's like on four or five songs.
Okay.
And we just had all these tools, so we used them. Because we could. And it was a kind of like our first time in like a fun studio that like it kind of lent itself to that kind of usage of instruments. So we took advantage of it, I guess. Like anyone else, I guess. Yeah.
Are you all joyous, or does this guy have the joy and it's rubbing off on all of you? I mean, I'm a kind of a lyric guy where I like to dig in into the words, right? So every time I try to listen to the words, I get sucked into the vortex of the joy of the music. And I can't follow the words because there's so much swirling and going on. It's good. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying that's just what happens. And I'm just wondering.
That's kind of the point.
It's just spilling over, you know. Do you all share that? Yeah. Would you normally play that music if it weren't for him?
I don't know. I'm a pretty happy person.
I mean, happy in like, I think every night we're extremely happy. I mean, we're able to play music as a living right now, which is pretty unheard of, you know. It's just a crazy idea to have, and like the fact that we can do it together every night is awesome, so we don't have anything but high spirits for it.
I take it, and you shake your head no or say no if this isn't true, but I assume you're all music lovers. I mean, beyond playing it, fans of going to see bands and clubs and stuff. Would that be true?
Degrees, so.
Okay, there you go. So,
and that's the best part is that Michael is just natural, so he doesn't even need to.
He didn't go to the same school you guys did.
No.
And do you hold that against him?
No. I think that's the best part. It's like
for not going to Berkeley, he didn't get sucked into that like Berkeley mold where they like kind of force feed a formula into you to writing like this is the Berkeley pop song and this is how you're gonna do it.
But those tools, I mean, I think there's both sides to that. I bet, Michael, maybe sometimes you're envious of what they have that they can pull off. Maybe once.
I grew up, I mean, I was taking like almost 14 years of jazz guitar. And,
okay.
And, I mean, like I did it, but the problem is that I was blessed and cursed with like, you know, having an ear. And so my dad, who was a music teacher as well, just would sit around like with his head in his hands like, why can't you just learn the theory and know what you're doing? And I just got away with it. I did the bare minimum and got through, but I've always just done what I've wanted to do. So yeah, I was going to go to Berkeley. Actually, I begged my parents for me to go to Berkeley.
Wow.
And my dad was like, absolutely not. Yeah, he wouldn't let me go. I did want
to
go.
So has dad and mom come to Passion Pit show yet?
My dad came to our CD release show in New York. And I actually dedicated a song to him. He's my biggest influence, and he's been such a wonderful person to talk with and to be with as this all kind of unfolds for us.
That's great. And I bet now he thinks that he wishes he sent you to Berkeley so you could.
No, he's like, look, I didn't even have to.
Save all that money. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.